This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 117 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, guys? Hashtag 117. Today we're bringing to the table a Sydney entrepreneur, Jack DeLosa.
Yeah, Jack's a brilliant entrepreneur, and now he is filling the minds of the best entrepreneurs in Australia, educating them. It's the biggest in Australia, I think, Johnny, 300,000 people in the community now.
That's right. He's created this vision from scratch. So, yeah, his brand's called The Entourage. And we did, you know, his space is awesome right there in Sydney.
It's just on the edge, kind of. Sorry.
Yeah, Harris Street. Yeah. But yeah, another opportunity, guys, to learn from, if you're living in Sydney, a guy who, before we talked to Jack, I was unaware that this whole subculture even existed. These networks, these masterminds, warehouses full of startups. So yeah, we're excited to get him on and share some insight to you guys.
Yeah, definitely. I think this week we've had two in-person interviews, and me and Johnny love these in-person interviews. We get a little bit more on the inside, get that body language going on, and it was a great episode that we did with Jack. So stay tuned for that. Before we get Jack on, big thank you to everyone out there for supporting the cause, all the messages, all the things that you're tagging us on social media. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better. And that's our number one drive for this, is to continue you and I to learn and also share and grow with our listeners. So, guys, we appreciate you. We appreciate the support and all the feedback.
Yeah, remember, you can subscribe via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Please leave us a 5-star review if you've got an iPhone or an iPad. And we'll just keep bringing the heat for you.
Yeah, other than that, Tristan.
Before we get Jack on, we just want to bring you to attention just to one of our friends at the moment who's just doing a little bit tough. His name's Harley. He's a personal trainer out of Fitness First George Street, where both myself and Johnny work.
Yeah, Harley, guys, if you really want to jump on board with the cause we're putting together, the campaign's called Helping Harley. We have a GoFundMe. He's battling brain cancer, and it gets really expensive, each one of these treatments. He's unable to work right now. I mean, he's a children's coach. Soccer was his sport of passion. The guy is super selfless. So anyone want to jump on board, in our show notes, we'll have the link. Also, if you're listening, we go to www.gofundme.com/Harley's- What does that say?
Beating-cancer.
Okay. Yeah, Harley/beating-cancer-campaign. Guys, the link will be in the show notes. Anyone who feels that they want to do something a little more and give back more, just send us an email at info@divisionboardpodcast.com, and we'll be happy to get you on board, man. Harley really needs all of our help.
Yeah, definitely, guys. And it doesn't matter how much you contribute. From $1 to $50, there is no pressure to actually contribute, but he is a good friend of ours, so yeah, we want to actually support him as best as we can.
Yeah, well said, man.
Okay, without further ado, here is Jack DeLosa. All All right, our special guest is Jack Deloza. Jack is the founder and CEO of Australia's largest education institute for entrepreneurs, which is called The Entourage, which has a community of over 300,000 members. He's an investor and author of two best-selling books, Unprofessional and Unwritten, and also the host of Ask Jack D. We welcome Jack Deloza. Jack, welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, man.
Thanks for having me, boys. Really good to be here. Thanks for coming out.
Excellent. Jack, let's get this thing started. First off, I want to say thank you for inviting Tris and I into your amazing facility. And for our fans listening at home, could you explain to us what The Entourage is and who The Entourage is for?
Yeah, well, I started The Entourage in 2010, mainly, you know, from a dissatisfaction with how traditional education does and does not educate those who want to go out and be entrepreneurs and innovators and, you know, color outside the line, so to speak. And so I was born out of dissatisfaction and inspiration for, you know, a belief that if you bring together some really good people and you can attract some of the best entrepreneurs in the world to help educate early stage business owners, then it can be quite impactful in terms of, you know, the meaning it can have in those people's lives and the trajectory it can have on those people's careers. So 7 years later, Australia's largest education institution for entrepreneurs. You know, Tristan, as you said in the introduction, we've got a community of about 300,000 highly engaged, you know, high growth business owners. And so much of what's amazing about The Entourage is the sort of camaraderie that exists in the community. And, you know, today our students and our graduates pepper the lists of, you know, BRW Fast 100 companies, BRW Fast Starters, all the 30 under 30 lists, all the top entrepreneur lists. You know, and so I think the whole journey to me is a testament to when you get independently minded people with a high work ethic and you put them in the right environment to learn from people who've been there, done that experience. It doesn't matter whether you're teaching accounting or entrepreneurship or anything else. It works when it's done well.
Where was it on day one, Jack?
How do you mean?
Like in terms of like me and Johnny have just walked into this beautiful office.
Yeah.
I was telling you about when I walked up the stairs.
Yeah.
The impact I got from actually seeing the theatre. I've spoken to a guy from Onnit, which is a big supplements company over in America, and he talked about his first day being in the top of an attic. And now it's similar to you. He's built this big gym, same thing, theatres. I'm sure that you've got a nice office and things like that. Where were you on that day one when it first kicked off?
Really, my lounge room on day one, because I'd built a few businesses prior to The Entourage, and a couple of them didn't work, and one of them in particular worked considerably well. That company was called MVE. We'd help businesses to essentially raise money from investors and acquire other companies and build value to ultimately exit. So prior to The Entourage, I was in a kind of it was almost like investment banking, but for small to medium-sized businesses. So it was highly commercial, which is great because it provided a great commercial training ground for me at a very young age. But it probably wasn't intrinsically aligned to who I am and the kind of contribution that I want to make while I'm here, right? So I was an owner at MBE. I was the I was managing MBE. I stepped back from that to start The Entourage. And so day one, yeah, just in the lounge room like everyone else.
Sydney
at that point. Yeah, I moved to Sydney for MBE.
Yeah.
It's part of the magic of creating. I love taking an idea, having it come to life and watching it grow. Jack, I was having a conversation just this morning with a client of mine about the use of the word entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And off the bat, I was thinking to myself, man, I should have that definition. I should be able to defy it for you what it is. And I was struggling with it. You look up the term and you see it thrown around a lot online. I'm an entrepreneur, et cetera, et cetera. How would you define what being an entrepreneur is, being a good entrepreneur?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And, you know, I'm not sure the technical definition matters too much, right? Like, I think that, well, the technical definition of an entrepreneur is typically somebody who's involved in several different ventures, often taking on considerable financial risk. You know, that's if you look it up in the dictionary, it'll show you some sort of variant of that.
Yeah.
I think sort of colloquially or culturally, the definition of the term has evolved to a far more inclusive one. And so today I think that often people use it to describe somebody who's living a life on their own terms, pursuing something that's meaningful to them, and someone that you know has a dream and is working towards it. And you know, whether you take the technical definition or the cultural definition, doesn't really matter.
So we talk about dreams. Me and Joey like to talk a lot about visions, and obviously the show is called the Vision Board Podcast.
Yeah.
How big do you want to take this?
Well, so our mission is to be the world's number one education institution for entrepreneurs. So we want to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
Our vision, which is like the contribution that we want to make, if you like. So the way I define mission and vision being the ultimate goal that we want to achieve, and the vision being why, what's the contribution that we want to make as a result of that, right? So our vision is to push civilization forward by enabling more people to live on purpose. And so, you know, education globally is a $4.4 trillion industry, right? And typically speaking, particularly in a lot of countries, very few people are looking at what's being taught, right? Yeah. Particularly in universities and colleges and even high schools and primary schools. Like, just there's a coming into education with an entrepreneur's perspective where we obsess about customer has been fascinating to me. Particularly, you know, we took a detour for a couple of years into accredited education and became an accredited college and all that. You know, we're going to change education from the inside out. And so even today, you know, I'm sort of mixing in circles and speaking at conferences with MBA directors and universities, and, you know, we do some cultural projects inside of universities and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to me how little a lot of traditional education looks at what's being taught, which in entrepreneurship terms is like the product, right? It's like running it's like a $4.4 trillion industry and nobody's looking at the product, right? Would be the sort of commercial way that I would describe it. And so, in my view, if you can develop a style of education that truly enables somebody to develop who they are, if you can develop a style of education that truly enables somebody to start and build something great, that might be a business, might be a career, might be whatever, and then you can find a way to scale that, then that's a really meaningful pursuit, and it's something that can be effective. And so when we say push civilization forward, we mean, you know, like there's some traditional education institutions in the world that enroll 300,000 to 400,000 students every year. And so the problem is that they don't deliver great education. So, but if you can imagine enrolling 300,000 or 400,000 students a year into phenomenal education that truly enabled them to step into their own leadership and their own purpose and their own direction, then that's really powerful. So, that's the ultimate vision. And that might take, you know, 20, 30, 40 years to get to, right? But that's why, you know, I view this as my life's work.
When you were younger, I mean, you're still a young dude, but we'll take it back, we'll say 5 years ago. How much of the risk-taking aspect of the being an entrepreneur was appealing to you? And I guess, was it the risk-taking, or was it the idea that you were able to change people the way they think in terms of creating something?
That's a really good question. That is a very good question. What appealed to me was the impact, right? You know, from a very young age, and you guys have clearly done your research, which I love. From a very young age, you know, I've had a lot of experiences which have kind of molded me into caring about people and caring about education. So I'm really at home here doing something like the Entourage. By way of risk, I don't think it was the risk that attracted me. It was just that I always had such a high appetite for it, right? Probably too high of an appetite for risk, that I'm sort of only now learning to take back. That to a degree. Yeah.
Do you feel, though, that, like, say some of your clients or friends or your circle, are you able to identify when people are allowing the lack of risk, or maybe it's fear holding them back in their growth?
Absolutely, yeah. And I kind of come at it, I think that used to frustrate me a little bit, you know, years and years ago. I kind of come at it today from just appreciating where different people are at, right? Like, some people are really happy, right? So if you view happiness, or you view sort of personal growth as the ultimate objective, some people are really happy not doing what I or what you guys would do as entrepreneurs. And I kind of don't necessarily have a view on that anymore. I'm more just sort of accepting of it. You know, I suppose I would have a view in, if you took somebody that did want to succeed and did want to go out and have a crack and they weren't doing that, then there's a misalignment there and they need to remove some of the fear and they need to sort of, you know, perhaps develop a mindset or develop some resilience around pushing themselves forward. But, you know, I think entrepreneurship is such a unique sport.
Yeah.
And you kind of need, I think anyone can do any, almost anything.
Do you think it has to be like those characteristics?
Yeah.
Think,
yeah.
Like personality characteristics? Yeah. Or like your setup, your environment?
Like a bit of both. Like, would you agree that entrepreneurship is not for everyone?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And who would it be best? Because we read a lot about, I'm currently down the rabbit hole of the education system and how we were put into this path in America of being told what to do. Go to high school, go to college, do this, this, and this. And then you start reading about like Alan Watts, you know, he pretty much changed my life when I started reading him about whatever you want to do, do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your stance on like the traditional education system and your opinion of that and how it could change for the better?
Yeah, well, it beats creativity out of us, right? And it beats risk-taking out of us. And the amazing thing about traditional education, particularly if you look at primary school and high school, is that it worked really well in the industrial age. You know, it was designed in like the 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
And it, in terms of fit for purpose, it was like a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
It was trained, because the whole intention of it, you know, it was Carnegie and all, you know, those 12 dudes who had factories all over America.
Vanderbilt, and, yeah, there's yeah, a bunch
that's
of
right. things. Yeah, and so they wanted to create a uniform workforce that all had the same capability. So if I started a factory in California, the workers would be trained the same and would have the same skill sets as if I started a factory in New York or whatever the case may be. And so it worked really well for that. The challenge is that the world changed really, really fast, particularly over the last 20 or 30, 40 years, and education hasn't. And so today we're left with an education system that is very estranged from the world that it's supposed to be preparing people for. And so if you know, like at school, we go, sit down, listen to me, I have the answers, I'll tell you whether you're right or wrong. Then you come out of school and we go, we'd love you to make some decisions now and be a leader. Or we put you in an exam and we say, sit down, don't talk to anybody. Don't even look at your phone, don't Google anything. This is an exam, you're not allowed to pull on any resources. And then we bring you out of school and we go, now we want you to be resourceful. You know what I mean? And so school is a simulation that is so estranged from the environment that people are going to step into when they leave school. And it's that disconnect that's making it so damaging for so many generations.
Yeah. Is there a criteria for a student enrolling at the Entourage?
There's a loose criteria in that they need to be somebody who is coachable.
Yep.
They need to be somebody who we believe will gel and contribute to the community and not simply detract from it. But in terms of we've gone through different periods of having like commercial hurdles and all of that stuff. We don't do any of that anymore. It's more around cultural fit today. Yeah.
Are you trying to like? Would it be fair to say that you're the dean and you create the different structure? Like, is that a fair sort of point? Like, to kind of compare it to university.
Yeah.
And for people out there trying to figure out like what Jack Deloza actually does on a day-to-day basis, are you the dean?
Yeah. I'm probably a little bit less academic than a dean per se. I'm more of a CEO, particularly today.
Mm.
I'm more of a CEO. So, you know, I'm across product, I'm across everything,
yeah.
Right? Because, yeah, but, you know, product growth, marketing, our programs, our students, our alumni, financial management, corporate strategy, international expansion.
How does the programs get put together? Do you sit down with a group of team and you guys go through the different theories that you need to teach? And can you just explain how that one goes?
That's a really good question. So I've got a director of education. His name's Tim Morris. He's an incredible thinker. Well, he's incredibly knowledgeable around entrepreneurship. He's incredibly knowledgeable and experienced and effective around learning,
yep.
You know, as opposed to teaching. He's great at teaching as well, but I just think learning is more important. And so usually it's a combination of Tim, myself, our experience, and any customer insight that's on the table. So we know, you know, because we've got such an engaged community, we know from pre a company starting, what their biggest challenges are, what their biggest objectives are. We know if you're doing between 0 and 100k revenue, what your biggest challenges are, what your biggest objectives are. If you're doing between 1 and 500, 500 mil, 1 to 5 mil, yeah. 5 to 10, 10 plus. And so we know our consumer, like heart and soul, really well, just intuitively, because we are our consumer and we obsess over, you know, learning and growth and our students or members. And then we've got, you know, the sort of quantifiable data as well. And so between Tim and myself, a huge degree of empathy and understanding and a huge degree of consumer insight, we're able to sort of coalesce all of those different elements into what we call intuitive education.
What was the most challenging part about this whole process for you up until where you are right now?
The government.
So being able to, is that in terms of like having the go aheads for certain things?
Could you give us an example? So I started in 2010. We've existed our entire life in delivering education for business owners. Mid 2015, we went into the accredited education landscape called vocational education training. So it's called the VET sector.
Now, Jack, sorry to interrupt. Are these students coming in or are they all online? Are those students downstairs or is that a call center?
That's our staff. That's our team downstairs.
Okay.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then when the student, are they coming in person? Are you seeing them distance coaching?
Yeah, a combination. So we do a lot of flipped learning. So they learn online. They come in and do workshops. Some of the more advanced businesses sort of engage in advisory, one-on-one advisory and mentoring and all that sort of stuff. And so it's a lot of flipped learning, which is essentially learn the basics in your own time and then come in for, you know, 2-day workshops kind of once a month or a couple of times a month, depending on, you know, how fast you want to move in order to apply and work with trainers and work with peers. Yeah.
Was it intentional that you put the location in Ultimo? Because when we were walking down, we walked past the TAFE first. And we parked by, sorry, the uni first and then the TAFE. Is this your way of saying, well, we're going to take on the big boys?
No,
that's what we were talking about.
Jack's
location, you know,
this is cool.
We were talking about a celebrity trainer, and he put his gym right in Beverly Hills, so it was one of those things like perfect spot.
Yeah,
right near the uni,
an education zone. Yeah,
yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
So was that planned?
No, I'm all looking at, like, there's Fishburners that's over the road.
Yeah.
The Entourage played a small part in, you know, helping establish by sort of promoting it when it was starting. You know, there was a small crew of us that had an office over in the city, and then we thought, and we literally had a line out the door of people that wanted to join this office, because like this tiny little startup hub with pizza boxes and Red Bull cans and all that sort of shit. And they were like, we should do this like formally, right? And so I was one of the guys at that table that, you know, my job was to fill it initially. So that's Fishburners, it's over today, it's Australia's largest co-working space. And then I think you've got a couple of more down on Harris Street as well.
So Fishburners is what?
It's a co-working space.
And could you explain that?
So it's essentially for early stage tech businesses predominantly that want to rent between a desk and, I don't know, say 20 or 30 desks. You come together and, you know, they've got four floors, so they've got, they have hundreds and hundreds of desks now. And so you're kind of working in amongst the team, or you're a solopreneur, but you're working in amongst this whole sort of vibrant community that's going on.
So they've created like a bit of a culture where there's like 100 different businesses on the same floor.
Yeah.
But they're all sort of in technology, so they all kind of run.
Collaborate.
It's like a mastermind.
That's right, yeah.
And is this something that, like, it runs Monday through Friday year round? Is this certain times of the year?
It's like a workspace, right? So they 7 days a week.
Excellent.
Yeah, there's another one on Bruce Street as well.
Mm. Yeah, there's heaps of them. But yeah, to your point around Ultimo, it's more of a, and again, this didn't really factor into our thinking in terms of coming here. We came here because it was just amazing for our purpose, right? In terms of education and having the team downstairs and all of that sort of stuff. But, you know, having a lot of, and even universities to a degree, because we work a little bit with them, you know, having all these people around us adds to the sort of ecosystem.
What would you say your main strength is?
Me personally?
Right, as CEO of the Entourage, what would you say if you were making a strength list and you had to circle one of them that you do the best at, what would that be?
Resilience.
Excellent. Something I like to ask people. So many people focus.
Very good question.
You see a lot, people are giving advice, experts make strengths and weaknesses, and I'm falling into the category of like, forget the weaknesses, focus on the strengths, obsess over those and be the best at that.
Yeah.
So resiliency, is there any specific story maybe you could share with us? about one time when Jack DeLosa had to be resilient. It's helped you get to where you are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's similar to this story I was starting before in terms of the our expedition into the accredited education, right? So we went into the vocational education space, and you know, you're sort of at the whim of any regulatory changes or any government changes or government decisions. And so we went into that space sort of probably a little bit naive and expecting that everyone else would care about education as much as we do. And it just wasn't the case, right? So the last 18 months, the government's made three substantial changes to the vocational education space here in Australia. And so if you look around Australia over the last 12 months, you know, they've almost wiped out an industry. And so Entourage is one of the few examples that we can point back to and go, we went through those changes that the government sort of imposed into an industry and came out of it, survived and thrived. And so it's kind of like your dot-com company during the dot-com crash. It was hard to survive. That's kind of like 2016 for us, right? So coming through periods like that, while maintaining, you know, your sense of purpose around delivery to students, while maintaining reputation, while maintaining brand, to do all of that concurrently through really challenging periods, it requires a resilience that you know, I think is quite unique to entrepreneurs.
Yeah, so I heard you on one of the other podcasts, and you were saying how tough, you know, year one and two were. You know, you were losing money, you were borrowing money, and you were in debt, and then you were seeing some money come in year four and five. For the audience out there, obviously, there's probably heaps of people going out there. Is there a little bit of advice that you can give for those that are just doing it tough at the moment in that 1 and 2 year period?
Yeah, absolutely. I think financial management is really important. Financial management can be a little bit tricky in year one and two because you don't, unless you have, you know, a degree of product to market fit and then some degree of predictability in your sales cycles and in your costs and all of that sort of stuff, it can be really hard to forecast, right? And so the first year or two, particularly if it's an unfunded startup, it's your first startup and, you know, like me, you started out of a lounge room or whatever, there might not be much financial management to manage, if that makes sense. But you want to get to a point where there is a degree of predictability around that. So if you're an established business going through challenging times, focus on who you are, focus on your purpose, but make sure you keep a very strong eye on financial management. It's critical. In terms of in the early years, it's about persistence, right? You kind of need to have an unshakable belief, right? You know, one of my good friends, a guy called Peter Davison, he was a seed funder in PayPal. He came in at a valor of 500K. They exited to eBay for 1.5 bill. So he did really well out of that deal. He was the investor that underpinned the establishment of Fishburners over the road. And, you know, if you ask Peter what's the number one skill required or characteristic required in entrepreneurs, he'll tell you delusion. You know, like PayPal, like that was Peter Thiel, who's Palantir.
Elon Musk,
right?
Like believing your own story.
1999. You have to be crazy, though, man. It's like
the Jack
Kerouac quote. The crazy ones, if you're crazy enough to think that you could change the world, those are the people who do.
That's right.
That's
exactly
true.
Right. And so you need an unshakable sense of self-belief to a point of delusion to keep going. But at the same time, you kind of need to have the maturity, awareness, and even consultation with people who've been there, done that experience, particularly with your industry, to know if and when you reach a point where you actually should move on from this idea and or this business and go on to the next.
What about your inner circle, Jack? Like, you're at the top right now. Who are those? We like to pay tribute to the people in your inner circle because for every success, there's people helping you along the path. Who are those people in your inner circle keeping you accountable? And what do they do for you?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think how I approach this today does point to a useful lesson for a lot of entrepreneurs. And that is that, like, let's say you started to learn the piano, right? You start by learning the piano, but you learn the sort of basic fundamental keys and chords and whatever. And then you learn by playing other people's music, right? And then when you get really, really good at playing other people's music, you start to compose your own songs and your own symphonies, right? And so I kind of relate that to entrepreneurship in a sense that had you asked me that question as little as 6 or 7 years ago, I would have said, I've got 10 mentors, one in marketing and one in sales and one in financial management, one in capital raising. And today I've got a great exec team that fulfill, you know, core sort of commercial functions. And I've got advisors around me, like financial advisors and legal advisors, educational advisors, all of that sort of stuff. But I don't necessarily have mentors per se anymore.
Yeah.
Mainly because I feel, and I'm so far off knowing everything, it's not funny. So that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I feel like I've got enough of the foundational understandings across a lot of different disciplines to be creative and to apply it in my own way, and then draw on specific advisors that can go deep into one function or, you know, one field with me as is required.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show. Jack, did you ever have some people talk about a light bulb moment, an aha moment, something that triggered brilliance, a moment of magic? Was there ever one of these moments for you that you could look back and reflect on and then share with us about maybe some inspiration and got you started?
Yeah, it's interesting because for me, life hasn't really happened in moments per se. Like, I was actually thinking about that just the other day. I was thinking, like, key kind of moments where you go, that's a massive win or whatever. And I'm sure if I thought about it in more detail, there'd be a few. But for me, it's more about it happened progressively. It happens probably slowly, particularly relative to our expectations of it before we get started.
Yeah.
Right? And so it's more of a progression. It's more of an evolution. You know, I think the main moment that started it for me was when I was in high school and I started dating this girl called Ash, and she... It's not what you think. And so... And Ash's... I remember arriving at Ash's house for the first time. I remember walking in, and the house was so big, it looked like a hotel. Like, I'd never seen a house this big, and I didn't know that sort of Ash came from this background before I'm walking into a house, right? Mm-hmm. I'm walking and I'm thinking, man, like, and so I was like, you know, I don't know, 14 at the time, and had only ever really been exposed to a traditional education. And so I was like, you know, her mum or her father must be like a really good accountant or a really good lawyer or a really good doctor or something.
Right.
And I can't wait to meet them and talk to them. And so I meet her father, and I just start asking questions because I'm so curious. And he was like, he was passionate, he was controversial, he had opinions. Because at this age, when you're 14, you think adults are really boring, right?
Yeah.
We are. Because, you know, like, because it seems like everyone's kind of conformed and everyone's just going through the motions. And so to find an adult who had that spark and had that childlike nature and spoke about things like miracles and spoke about things like following it was just really unique for me. And then I found out that he wasn't a lawyer, he wasn't a doctor, he hadn't even finished high school. You know, he dropped out of high school, he became a labourer, and then one day sort of decided he wanted to do something more with his mind rather than his hands, so he started a business that he ultimately sold for, you know, a substantial amount of money. So he was the first example of who I saw that we would call an entrepreneur today.
Yeah.
And so meeting him changed my mind, changed my life, and gave my heart something you just sort of aspire toward.
Have you ever had an opportunity to tell him that?
Yeah.
That's
awesome. Yeah. I don't know if I've told him that in those exact words, but I've certainly thanked him and let him know how sort of formative meeting him was, yeah.
That's important. Have you had an opportunity to see the interview with Simon Sinek on Tom Bilyeu's show Inside Quest? And he goes on that little rant about the millennial question. It went viral about 2 weeks ago.
I've seen that millennial question. I haven't seen the whole interview, but I've seen that bit.
Did you catch the context of it about Sinek was talking about a whole overview generalization of a generation's issues with social media?
Yeah.
And that, what's your thoughts on that? Just on, what are your thoughts on, I guess, the usage and the possibilities of social media being good and bad and the parallels in between?
Yeah. I think, I can't remember exactly what he was saying, but from memory, I do remember thinking there was a lot of merit to what he was saying. For me, it's a bit of a two-sided argument, because it's kind of like we spoke about it before, the definition of entrepreneur, and I was like, does it matter?
Yeah.
With social media, whether it's good, whether we think it's good or whether we think it's not, I'm not sure that it matters, because it's what is, and the trend that it's on and the trajectory that it's on. We are going to live in a world that is highly digitized, highly surrounded and immersed in technology, whether we like it or not, right? So I do think that has a lot of damaging or, you know, perhaps sort of detrimental effect on young people. You know, the disconnect that it forms between human beings, I think, is substantial, right? Like if you ever have dinner at the moment with an 8 or 10 year old, they would rather sit there on their iPad than engage with other human beings. Sure. And there's an element of sadness to that. The other side of that same coin is that now more than ever, particularly upcoming generations, are highly resourceful. We've got access to any sort of knowledge or information that we would like. You know, in the not too distant future, you know, you'll see things like AI helping people diagnose illnesses. You might see things like AI sort of curing diseases and things like that. And so there's a lot of drawbacks and sort of negatives to the advancement of technology, particularly at this speed that we're seeing. But there's also a lot of positives. For me, it's and I'm sure this is why you asked the question, it's more about how do we best enable ourselves and up-and-coming generations to live a meaningful life with it, rather than to sort of have it detract from our quality of life. And to me, and this is me, right, because a lot of other entrepreneurs would come at this from a very different angle. To me, I'm more focused on the psychology of upcoming generations and the technology of upcoming generations. In my view, there's a lot of entrepreneurs, like almost every entrepreneur, looking at technology and how to advance technology. I more look at psychology, similar to you guys, and how do we advance psychology so that human beings can have a healthy relationship with technology. And I think that while there's a lot of people looking at technology and technological advancement, I don't think there's enough people looking at true psychology and true psychological advancement.
Yeah, and what do you actually like using social media for? Like, for example, is there educational things you just only put on there? Like, what's your kind of take on it?
Are you like Snapchatting, like Gary Vee? He's everywhere on Snapchat. Like, are you on that side of the fence or the opposite side of the fence?
Gary's hardcore, man.
Dude, he tried selling it to us.
He's like, full-time job.
Yeah. He told us to put the podcast on Snapchat, and we're like, I don't know about that. It just had me thinking too. I like the question. So, you know, you being a CEO entrepreneur, like, what's your opinion on that?
I'm not as hardcore as Gary, for instance. You know, and I think Gary's a legend, by the way. But Gary's very be on all of it, all of the time. Even if your customers aren't there, go there now because they will be soon. And you know. And there's so much truth in that for the right people. I take a slightly more balanced view in that. I think if it works from an audience capture perspective, firstly, if you're the kind of person that likes broadcasting yourself, right? I obviously am. Gary obviously is. Not everyone else is. Like for Musk, I don't know if he's ever been on Snapchat, but I haven't seen him on Snapchat, right? And it hasn't held him back. And, you know, the same is true for a lot of great entrepreneurs. And so, for me, it comes down to who you are. Is building audience important to you? Where is your audience? And is there an effective commercial strategy, commercial or personal strategy, that social media or a social media platform helps you fulfill? And if it is, go in. And if it's not, then don't worry about it. Do something more important. Like, I was speaking to... I will mention his name because I actually think that this is a massive hat tip to him. I have a huge amount of respect for this guy. I was speaking to Scott Farquhar a couple of weeks ago, just over the phone. Farquhar's the co-founder and co-CEO of Atlassian. So they started here in Sydney, you know, in a dingy sort of second story thing, just coding and stuff, and created great products that enable corporates and large scale organizations to project manage and coordinate between teams and all that sort of stuff. You know, Atlassian listed on the NASDAQ probably a couple of years ago now. I'm not sure of the valuation today, but it's somewhere in the vicinity of about $4 billion, right? So it's one of Australia's most successful startups. You know, you don't see Scott on Snapchat, and you know, he posts a photo on Instagram every 2 weeks, and it's, you know, him on the bus with his kids in Spain. That's a complete hypothetical. But, you know, and I said to him, you know, why don't you do more of it? He goes, I've got better things to do, right? And, like, that's it sounds simple and casual, but it's actually quite profound if you think about it, which is I'm all about highest and best use. So for some entrepreneurs, in some businesses, in some instances, obsessing about social media is going to be the highest and best use. But for a lot of people, it's probably not.
Yeah. For your students, do you use that? Do you address the social media landscape?
Yeah.
Okay. And then if you are, is there, like, are you breaking it down per industry? Are you breaking it down per progress where they are just getting started, already deep into it? How do you navigate that space?
Yeah, really good question. So a lot of our topics go from beginner through to sort of relatively advanced, and particularly with a new model that we're coming out with soon, you kind of choose your own adventure in terms of what you want to study, well, what you want to learn, when you want to learn, and who you want to learn it with. And so, yeah, we do. We go deep on it because it is such a prevalent thing, you know, and can be such an effective strategy when deployed, you know, in the right way, at the right time, by the right person.
Mm. All right, let's look at your day-to-day. I like to get insights into your habits.
Mm.
And you train with Greg Stark, correct?
Yeah.
So we've got Greg coming on Thursday.
Oh, good.
Yeah, total coincidence.
He's actually just out of the blue.
Tell him the story how that happened.
We interviewed a guy called Hayden Cox.
Well, thank you.
And he's the owner of Hayden Shapes, which is a big surfboard.
Yes, he's a legend. He was on Ask Jack not so long ago.
He's a really cool dude. Yeah, I got his book as a Christmas present, so I thought I'd reach out.
Next wave.
And we got him on. And then we did a good job for Hayden. We had a great chat. And then Schuster, that's his publisher, they reached out and they go, would you like to interview Greg? And
you should.
Yeah, and I thought it was a great one. I haven't looked at Greg's background and what he does in Warners.
Yeah, so Greggy's latest book, Sweat Equity, is the only book I've ever read on health and fitness. Now, I really value my health and fitness. In fact, it's probably my number one value. Yeah. But I don't read books on it because I find it to be like too theoretical and too sort of
science-based.
And
just doesn't inspire you.
It doesn't inspire me, and it's not actionable being as busy as we are, right? Yeah. So Greg's an entrepreneur, and he sort of marries ancient philosophy with modern-day science and brings it together in a way that people can apply. Like busy sort of business leaders, entrepreneurs can apply. And mate, it's really good. We had him on Ask Jack a couple weeks ago, and the engagement, because we just go live on Facebook, so everyone just asked questions and the engagement was through the roof, because our audience, like your guys and my audience, health is such a priority, and we all want to know, you know, how to sleep better, how to train better, how to feel better. And so
it's a special niche, you know what I mean? Yeah, like you said, we've got personalities that sometimes a business person just doesn't know how to train.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a great opportunity to do that. So how do you train?
Yeah, good question. So today, and thanks to Greg, in a lot of ways, I kind of have a more well-rounded training regime. I swim, I run, and I sort of train on the gym floor with weights and stuff. I try to get in sort of 4 or 5 times a week, but often it ends up being sort of 3 or 4.
So if we ask Greg tomorrow, is he going to say that?
Well, I only train with Greggy every now and again these days because he's in the wrong part of the city. Yeah, yeah, that's right. But, he'd back me up for sure.
You want to go through a few
fan questions? And then we'll go fan questions and personality.
Yes, sir.
Excellent. So I'll get this little segment started. Jack, so one of the questions is, so budding entrepreneur, written a course. The question comes in terms of the marketing side of things. So how would you take a product, we'll put it in the fitness industry, we'll put it as a 6-week course on business success, after the product is on paper and it's been delivered in front of a, you know, classroom, how would you market it online?
So does he have a landing page?
Yes.
Got a landing
page. Website landing page. In terms of the redistribution of the course, how would you do that? Yep. How would you go about it?
I do it through a number of ways. So the first way would be partnerships. So partnering with complementary businesses or organizations that have the same audience that, that he does, and gaining access to existing distribution, right? When, particularly when you're starting, it's a lot easier to leverage off somebody's existing distribution than it is to create your own. That's not to say that you, it's not an or, it's an and, right? You want to create your own as well. The second thing is I would do a lot of online marketing to whatever degree he can afford it through channels where his audience are. So if you take Facebook, for example, there could be a strong sort of customer acquisition strategy to come from Facebook. And so if you've got partnerships, you've got strong online marketing, you've got PR in the media, in terms of amplifying your story and your strategies through the media.
Yeah.
All of that will only be as strong as the journey that you then take prospects and customers through, right, in order to actually acquire a customer. So I'd set up, you know, mainly those three things as a customer-facing sort of lead generation aspect, and then it's about building a process that takes them from, I don't know you, what do you offer, to I know you, like you, trust you, and believe you have a great deal to offer. And that's just about touch points. So that's about giving them resources that that genuinely add value to their life. It's about, you know, today you can send them a voicemail blast. So it's, you record a voicemail, you send it out to 10,000 people, it drops in their voicemail without the phone ringing. So they get up their voicemail and, you know, it's Tristan that's left them a voicemail, for instance. You know, emails, phone calls, all of that sort of stuff. So I do a lot of audience capture, and then I'd move them through a systemized process to a point where they were ready to buy.
Okay. Next question is actually from one of my cousins. He sent me this last night. He's just about to have a startup business. He wants to know how you find an investor apart from crowdfunding and the pros and cons of actually having that investor.
With investment, you want to wait as late as possible without hindering the growth of your business, right? And so I do think that a lot of entrepreneurs try and raise money too early. Yeah. And the reason I say wait as long as possible without hindering the growth, the reason I say wait as long as possible is the more proof of concept you have in your business, the more milestones you've achieved to date, the greater your team, the greater your product market fit, the greater your audience, obviously the higher the valuation you're going to be able to defend in front of an investor. And so if you think about it, you want to raise 50 grand and you can only defend a valuation of 100 grand, then you're giving up half your company, right? But if you can hold out a few months or 6 months or however long it takes and get that valuation to $500,000 or $1 million, right? And you want to raise 50 grand on a value of a million, you're only giving up 5%, diluting your equity by 5%.
Yep.
And so generally speaking, the more robust a foundation you can build, the higher the valuation you can defend, therefore the less you'll dilute. And so that's the first thing is don't rush out. You know, the best way to generate, to raise capital is to generate revenue, you know, which I often think, although it might be a little bit harder, it might take a little bit longer, ingrains really strong habits in early stage entrepreneurs because you're literally dealing with profit and loss and cash flow management from day one. Now, that's not always possible. You know, some businesses require external investment to get off the ground. But you know, it should be viewed as a means to an end only when necessary, not as something that you must do in your first year because, you know, that's what startups do kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. All right, personality time, buddy.
All right, let's get this show started. So, Jack DeLosa, if three of your closest friends were in this room and you weren't in this room, what are some of the things they'd be saying about you?
They would say...
I love when they laugh straight away.
They would say I'm crazy, probably. That's why I laugh. In every sense, they would say that I can oscillate between the maturity of a 70-year-old and a maturity of a 12-year-old. And they would probably say that I care to a large degree.
Okay, I'm going to take you back to your childhood. What posters did you have on your wall growing up?
Mate, this is actually embarrassing because I didn't have any posters on my wall. But the magazines that teenagers have under their bed.
Yes.
The magazine I had under my bed was like Time magazine, and we had a magazine here in Australia called Wealth Creator magazine. And so while most teenage boys have a certain kind of magazine under their bed, my magazines were like Kerry Packer on the front cover. So it was very different to the average.
Kerry's afraid.
Yeah.
It was like your childhood vision board, man. Yeah, opening those pages up and look what's happened.
That's right.
All right, our final question is, Jack DeLosa, you're having a private dinner party. You get to invite 5 guests. They can't be any friends or family, but they could be anyone dead or alive. Which 5 people are you inviting?
Steve Jobs, Nelson Mandela, Elon Musk, Oprah Winfrey, and my brother.
Awesome. Now, Jack, where can the people find you on social media? Give the entourage a bit of a plug too, mate.
Yeah, sure. So, Facebook, it's just Jack DeLosa. Instagram, it's just Jack DeLosa. And then same with the entourage, it's just the THE entourage.
Awesome. Well, Jack, we've run out of time, but I've got a million more questions, so we have to do part 2, man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and then how can the people tune into the Ask Jack D show?
On the Jack DeLosa Facebook page. So if you just go to facebook.com/DeLosa, DELOSA, that's where everything is.
Excellent, man. We really appreciate you. Thank you for your
time.
Thanks, boys. That was great. Cheers.
Guys, that was Jack DeLosa.
Yeah, Jack DeLosa, guy, you know, I find inspiration in innovators and people who are thinking differently. And having sitting down with him in person, seeing his space that he's created, super inspiring.
Oh, hell yeah. It was just when we walked through that, when we went to his office.
Yeah.
And to go through that amphitheater that he had, it's quite an impressive feat for a guy that's 27, 28 years old.
He just turned 30.
30? Oh, yeah. Starkey said that.
Starkey, yeah, just turned 30. They started this thing about 8 years ago.
Still, I'd be impressed if he was 50.
Yeah, man, for sure. You know, it takes courage and a lot of vulnerability to put yourself out there. So I'm sure we'll touch base on those key points. And, you know, like we said at the beginning of the show, it's always awesome to get the dynamic in person. And bringing these Sydney guys and girls to, you know, to your ears is, we feel it's super, it helps our show a little bit. You know, helps the flow when we have him sitting with us.
Hell yeah. I think Friday wrap up this week, we'll be speaking a lot about entrepreneurship and business, Johnny.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, guys, next on the agenda, we've got Greg Stark. Greg is a wellness coach in Sydney. He's just released his new book, which is Sweat Equity. He actually trains Jack DeLosa as well. I'm sure that you heard us mention him in the podcast. So can't wait to get Greg on. Before we go, just want to remind you just about our support for one of our friends, Harley. Harley is a personal trainer down at Fitness First George Street here with me and Johnny. Unfortunately, he's been going through a bit of a tough time. He's been battling brain cancer over the last 2.5 years. Unfortunately, that means that he hasn't been able to work over the last couple of months. This treatment that he's got is expensive, and we want to help him the best way we can. So we want to let people know about what he's going through and just give him the best support that we can.
Yeah, guys, we'll have the link, the GoFundMe link in the show notes. You could also, you know, go to our pages. I know the Helping Harley campaign's on my Johnny Stofko page. It's on your page as well.
Just send us an email, info@thevisionboardpodcast.com, if you want to contribute or you want to know more, because, you know, Harley's a good friend of both of ours, and we want to support him the best we can, and I think this is the best way we can actually do it.
Yeah, man.
All right, guys. Like I said, Wednesday we've got Greg Stark, and also tune into the Friday show. A bit of value for you, definitely there as well. So we'll see you then.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching a niche, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working hard at it. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and, you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are 2 for 2.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.